my child presented, "I love my house because it has a pole, and mommy shows me all the cool pole tricks, and I can climb on," you know, something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so like, this is like a viral meme basically. But if I was in the Midwest, this could be like a life ruiner to out someone like this.
Welcome to the Wash Your Mouth Out podcast, power, pleasure, and parenting. We are stigma smashing feminist parents creating a new narrative. Put in your earbuds. This is for you only. This is the place to be entertained, empowered, inspired, and feel seen while you're raising small humans.
Wash your mouth out!
We are your hosts,
Moriah Malott
and Madison Young.
Today we have with us Elle Stanger, who is a podcasting sex educator with a decade of work experience in sex work and adult entertainment. She is a queer femme who co-parents a small child and who loves poodles and sandwiches. Her focus of work is reducing shame through education and story sharing. And you can find her at stripperwriter.com and strangebedfellowspdx.com. Welcome, Elle.
Hi, Madison. Hi. Thank you for having me.
It is so nice to have you here.
And so, you're a parent?
Yeah. So, I have a just-turned 7-year-old.
Aw.
Yeah, she's funny. She sticks up for herself really well. We can talk about that later. It's amazing how if you raise children to advocate for themselves, they will. So, yes, that's...
For better or worse.
For better. Yes. Yeah, I know. So, that's a newer part of my person. But yeah, everything else you just said, Madison, is I. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So jumping right into the kind of work that you do is very adult.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're raising someone who's not yet an adult, and you need to talk about your work because it comes up, the work that you do, what mommy does for a living, and all the kind of things that are on your mind and that you're probably on the phone talking about here and there for work, all the things that get heard by someone who is 7 years old. So I'm just super curious, what is talked about? How much is out there?
So I've been to your house, Madison, and my house is like your house where there's books about sex everywhere. And nudity and art and sex and history and body function. So the stuff is out and, you know, like I'll have my things not hidden by any means, but her books are on like the bottom two shelves and mommy's are kind of just everywhere. I do my podcast recording when she's not there, but until recently she would hear me doing some of the editing. So I keep things context appropriate because I'm not going to let her hear anything about like spitting or choking or slapping because she would have no context for that. But, you know, the word sex she's seen around. I also have the house decorated with penises and vulva art. And when she was about 4, I remember getting a sample from a toy company in the mail and they said, "Can you write a review?" So I open the mail and I'm like, oh, my sample's arrived. And it was a suction dildo. And my 4-year-old was like, oh, a penis decoration. And I said, yeah, let's see if it sticks to the wall. So I had my 4-year-old running around with a penis decoration trying to stick it to different surfaces. And I've had people send me messages and they're like, that's child abuse.
Oh.
I'm like, well, half of the world has a penis. It's just like when she sees the dog licking himself or peeing, she's like, oh, that's the dog's penis. She understands when we watch nature shows that babies are born because a penis goes into a vagina and there's something called semen that fertilizes an egg and then a baby grows and it comes out of the vagina. Or in mommy's case, she loves to laugh about how she got stuck in my vagina because I was in labor for 67 hours and had to have a cesarean. So it's all very normalized. And the other day she came over and I was preparing a consultation for a client. This particular person had a kink they were very ashamed of. And so I'm prepping like their resources and information. And she comes over and she's like, what are you writing about? And I thought, how am I going to frame this? And I said, I'm writing about And she says, sex or something. And that was the first time that she actually like asked and then answered it herself. And I'm like, yeah, actually I am. So that felt like a golden moment where it was just so casual. And like, again, she doesn't understand all of the inner outer workings of what sex means. She understands that it's something that people do with their bodies to feel good in different ways when they feel like it. I've explained it's a type of touch. And I learned a lot of that language from you, Madison, because your child is a bit older than mine, so you have more practice in this. I don't know how old your children, child?
9 and 5.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you have more practice too, a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And we're learning as we go.
Yeah.
So she also knows, when she was even younger, and I wrote about this, I've written a couple of those, I'm a sex worker, and this is what I'll tell my child. And I remember driving past the strip club, and I'm like, look, honey, that's where mommy works. I dance for people, and I tell them jokes, and I give them hugs, because some people like to pay money to watch people dance or be hugged or laugh, you know, and that's not like a new idea. Obviously, we have massage therapy and comedians, so
yeah. Yes.
So the context is not incredibly specific, but it'll be very, very easy to transition these conversations to be more specific as she gets older. At the end of her kindergarten class last year, they did a write a story about your family. And all the parents gathered for the day where the kids would share their stories. And at this point, it was the end of the year. So a lot of parents in the classroom knew that I was a stripper because one of them found me on Instagram. Like, it wasn't a secret, but it was still a little almost embarrassing when my child presented, I love my house because it has a pole and mommy shows me all the cool pole tricks and I can climb on, you know, something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so like, this is like a viral meme basically. But if I was in the Midwest, this could be like a life ruiner to out someone like this. Whereas I take it for granted because I live in a semi-sexually progressive environment. So it's a lot. It's a lot for people who don't live like this at all, don't have any exposure to sex ed or adult industry to hear all of this and just to consider like, wow, people live this way and it's not damaging to children at all. So, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, as adults, we're the ones that put the shame on a vulva toy or a penis or a dildo. It really is just silicone shaped as a penis, a body part. It could be silicone shaped as a nose and be another body part.
Yes.
And the reason that there is shame and stigma about it is because of our own relationships to our body and to sexuality. And people are so afraid. There's like so much fear there that they go to that place that's so easy for them of, I don't want to engage with this, and therefore it is child abuse, which is frightening to us who are out there and trying to change that and want to create a more open environment for our children to feel good about their bodies and to be able to communicate about their bodies and who and agency around their body. You know, it's like really hard work. And it's brave and so important.
I want to comment on something you said about parents, feeling like, I don't want to engage with this. It's also like, they just don't know how. I'm sure you hear that from people who are like, how do I explain this to my child? They want to, but, and it makes sense too, because like, you know, I was traveling yesterday. We were in an airport, like a very busy public place, and my kid's kind of fidgeting around, and she just sticks her hand in the back of her pants and she's like rubbing her butt cheek or scratching or something, you know. And I'm like, honey, get your hands out of your pants. I don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable, which is what I say to her, because I'm like, you're not doing anything wrong, but some people feel uncomfortable when other people touch their genitals in public. That tends to be something we do at home or in a private space. So it's hard, because I think a lot of parents would be like, stop doing that. That's gross. That's wrong.
Right.
And it's not that it's gross and wrong. It's just not context appropriate. So even when I start to feel that tingle of like fear and shame, I'm like, oh God, I'm being judged. I have to calmly like take a breath and be like, it's okay. I'm not the only parent in the world that's had a kid stick their hand in their pants.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely. Yeah. And it probably feel, you know, as someone, it must feel as someone who works in the sex field for a living, like a little bit more like, a little bit more nervous around anything, you know, where people are judging your parenting, I'd imagine.
It's ridiculous. I mean, so I'm a heavily tattooed person. You know, this was like, tattoos are ridiculous. It's something people can afford to pay or have access to put on their body. It doesn't make you cool. It doesn't make you smart. Tattoos are decoration. I don't feel strongly about them, but I've had people comment that I'm a bad parent because I have a lot of tattoos. And I'm like, that's really interesting. I actually had a photo taken from my Facebook page. And every year I'll do, it started with her first birthday. It was like a smash cake. I took a picture of me on the floor with her presenting this cake. And every year we repeat the photo of whatever I made for that birthday, whether it's like donuts or cupcakes. So it's cool to see over the last 7 years them develop. But for this first year, someone took the photo and posted it to a Tattooed Mommies Facebook group. And people were in this group on this page saying that I must be a bad parent. I'm like, why do you follow this page?
Right.
Oh. People are wild.
Wow. I mean, I was just thinking when you were talking about like that it's just like the shape of a body part. People are also so narrow-minded about what sex is. Mm. So the lips are a sex organ that we use quite a bit. And people have no problem giving silicone lips or wax lips or whatever for our kids to play with. They're just hanging out all the time. But we are so, it's just like these specific body parts, you know, that we have so much shame about.
Mm-hmm. My mother, which I love my parents, but I definitely grew up in a very not sex positive environment. My mom was visiting us when we were, like last year we were in New York for a month, and my mom flew in to New York to hang out with us, and she was helping my then 7-year-old in the shower. She was she was bathing, and she's like, okay, make sure to wash your arms, wash your belly, and wash your make sure to wash your down there.
Oh no.
And she was like, what, Grandma? And she was like, you know, you're down there.
Oh.
And
Grandma's trying.
Yeah. And she was like, Grandma, are you trying to say the word vulva?
You know? Yeah.
And she's like, yes, that's the word.
You know? Mm-hmm. Oh, good. At least she said yes and didn't like completely back out of the conversation.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
But, you know, it's like still, I think having words for our body. And I'm so, my now 2-year-old, their first word was vava, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so important for us to have words for our body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my daughter changed it to vulves. So that was like one of the first words was vulves.
Totes vulves.
Totes vulves.
That's so cute. So stuff about like implanting ideas of gender roles begins so early with children too. I just visited my family also, and I have one sibling. They have one child. This child likes to play with tools and construction and machines and electronic, like building stuff. So did my child. My child has a vulva vagina. She's going by she. If that changes, that's fine. My sibling has a child that has a penis. He's going by he. He's a boy. If that changes, I think it'll be fine. But I had another relative there present that said, oh, yeah, he likes those things because he's a boy. Yeah. And I said, my daughter likes those things, too. She's literally playing with a helicopter in the next room. And my family member was trying to explain to me how it's been like an evolutionary thing that's like evolved to where boys are just more apt to play with tools. And I'm like, did you learn this in your time as a geneticist? Like, what are you talking about? And they were so sure of it. I'm like, no, you're a baby boomer. This is what you were taught, you know?
Yeah, there's no evolutionary biology behind that at all.
It's marketing.
Yeah,
it's all marketing. It's marketing and how to sell us shit.
Yeah, exactly. So you said your mom, you love your mom, and Yeah, my dad is the same way, where he's just like of that generation. And something else I noticed with adults is they don't really, adult males don't necessarily, adult men, I'm trying to get away from saying males and females, but again, socially ingrained, adult men don't tend to know how to talk to children and little girls. So what I experienced, and let me just give you a rundown of the first 30 seconds of my reunion with my father last week. So my child says, "Grandma," and my dad says, "Oh, you're so excited to see Grandma. How come you're not excited to see me?" And I looked at him and I said, "Well, because Grandma doesn't passively aggressively tease her." And he says, "Well, I did it to you and you turned out fine." And I said, "No, Dad, I'm in therapy
Wait, is he my dad? We have the same dad?
You know, and I was like, "I'm in therapy for it, Dad. Once a week, I'll send you the bill." Because it's like, no, you spent a great amount of your time criticizing, nagging, teasing me about my appearance or my actions. You told me when I was 12 that PMS wasn't real. Like, some really hardcore, like, toxic beliefs that are just so normal to him. And at dinner, I'd said to my daughter, I said, "I know Grandpa can tease sometimes. He's not good at communicating. It's okay for you to tell him you don't like how he's talking to you." So at one point, Grandpa's had a couple drinks. He's starting to run his mouth. And my 7-year-old looks at him. She says, "Grandpa, I've had enough of your jokes."
That is awesome. Yeah.
And I turned, and this is in front of the family dinner, and he actually shut up. And I turned to her. I said, "Good job, Raven. Way to advocate for yourself." You can include her name in that, by the way. And in the drive home, it was just she and I later. And I said, "I know Grandpa can be really frustrating sometimes. He's not good at talking to children." And she said, "Was he like that when you were little?" I said, "He was, honey." And she says, "I'm sorry." And I was like, "Oh my God, you're 7. Like, she knows something's wrong. This isn't, you know.
She knows it's not right.
There's a disconnect, and she can feel it because all the other adults in her life don't treat her like this. So it's really generational, and it's amazing to see how our kids can be so much better than our parents were to us.
You know, that entire story feels like the exact same story that happened with my dad and my daughter. How healing, though, is it to be able to give your child the tools to deal with that same person that hurt you in that way? It just felt very, very healing for me.
And not feel victimized.
But also, it's really hard to get support from other adults, especially in your family. I've found around equipping your child in that way. Because, like, oh, they should just, you know, deal with it and be nice to their grandparent or be nice to whatever family member. Hug them.
Kiss them.
Yeah, even if you don't want to. And then people just get really snippy about it. It's hard.
My mom is a child educator for a long time. And she's married to my dad still. And she's not nearly as toxic as him. And I say toxic, I don't mean that he's actually, like, intending to be hurtful. But, again, this is just how he is. He doesn't know how to socialize or talk, and he's not really willing to receive feedback because he's also like 65 years old and just like, I don't want to change. But my mom was like, go hug your auntie. And I said, how about, do you want to give your auntie a hug? And my mom said, oh, it's fine. I said, no, Mom, I hated that shit. Listen to me.
That's it.
So We're doing all right, right? I feel like we're breaking some cycles.
Yeah, it's happening. A lot of us are doing it.
Hey, speaking of breaking cycles, we're thinking about breaking cycles of oppression of our bodies, breaking cycles of abuse, breaking cycles of poverty. And we're thinking deeply about Alabama and other places where they are trying to outright ban abortion, which is necessary health care. We want to, instead of a sponsor break this week, encourage you please to take your money, if you have not yet, to the Yellow Hammer Fund. The yellowhammerfund.org provides funding for anyone seeking care at one of Alabama's 3 abortion clinics and will help with other barriers to access, like travel and lodging, as well as they are able to. and they've been assisting patients since the beginning of 2018 and are part of the National Network of Abortion Funds, which you can also go to try and find a way to help a little bit closer to home as well, if you would like. So we believe here at this podcast in reproductive justice. We believe in all kinds of rights to choose about our bodies, having to do with pregnancy and birth and breastfeeding and postpartum, all of this. So it's very important that you make sure that some of your dollars are helping others in this way. Tell people about yellowhammerfund.org and use the hashtag. Their hashtag is Fund Abortion Build Power. And right at yellowhammerfund.org, you will be able to donate. Please do so, even if it's a tiny bit.
Back to our show.
Now, your kiddo is in what grade now?
First.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the school environment like? You were talking a little bit about that. I know that's always a... Every time that I come out, I tiptoe
mm-hmm.
first of, I'm an author,
mm-hmm.
I'm a filmmaker.
I'm a teacher.
I speak at colleges.
I'm a writer.
I'm an artist. Oh, but then what do you make work about? Feminism and sexuality. You know, oh, do I know some of the, what are some of the titles? You know,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to decide how much you divulge and who's safe and what feels safe. What is your environment like at school?
So you and I are the same in the way that we have a pretty large social media internet. I mean, Google it, you know, Google our names and right. there's no secrets, really. And I feel like that was your choice. That was my choice. But you're right. It is still, it's a delicate process. So here's one example. I co-parent with my child's father. We were married. We are divorced. It's really amicable. Grateful in that regard. He's a great parent. He's understanding. And he also has dated and partnered with other people in the industry. So it's pretty much understood that if we receive an email from the school, he's going to be the one to respond to it because my email is like in my signature is like linked to the podcast and my website, which goes to my webcam and like, you know, ask to buy my porn. So I don't need to respond to the birthday party invite with that.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad could be the one to do it. And it's just probably because I just want to avoid making other parents uncomfortable and then to act weird around me and then to act weird around her, which, you know, it's like pick your battles.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I, you know, I could be in the grocery store and sometimes I'm going to pay for $45 of groceries with ones because I was at the strip club and that's all I have. And I haven't gotten to change those in at the credit union yet or whatever. And the cashier is going to ask if I'm a bartender. And 90% of the time I will say, no, I'm a stripper. Because fuck them, they need to hear it. Also, like, why are you asking? And it's really interesting to see the range of responses that people give, especially when I'm with my child. They seem really uncomfortable.
Mm.
So that I feel like when I have the energy for it, I want to show people like, no, we exist in the world. But I don't always want to do that.
Right.
So again, it's like a pick your battles thing. How much do I want to engage with? Because if it really goes south, I could just maybe not go to that grocery store, but I'm still going to have my child at the school where she is for a few years. So it's like I'm trying to carve out little bubbles where I can exist comfortably with the least amount of friction, but also stick to my beliefs.
Yeah.
It depends.
Wow.
Yeah, it's okay. I also had, when I was in the dressing room, one more thing, I was getting dressed after shift, and one of my longtime coworkers, she says, oh, one of my good friends, she saw you pick up your daughter the other day from school. And I immediately like tensed. I'm like, who is seeing me pick up my child? They now know where she goes to school. And like, what was I doing? Do they know what I drive? Like, I don't know this person. So the visibility is just really interesting. You know, like we choose these paths because we believe in what we do, but it can also come with, I guess, unexpected challenges,
yeah.
just in the visibility.
Yeah.
Not
knowing not knowing when you're going to be judged, who's going to accept you and who's not. And
I have to come out constantly just as queer, constantly, just as a two mom family. And that feels so scary to me all the time. But the idea of being in sex work, that scares me so much. Just like listening to you, I just feel, scared for my friends who are sex workers and parents. Because
I've had people like tweet on Twitter that they've seen me like out strolling my child, you know, they're like, oh, I just saw Madison Young. She was like singing a lullaby, you know. Oh my gosh.
Right.
Where were you?
Right.
Who are you?
Right. And then the person in the comments will be like, where? And then they'll list your location.
Yeah.
You know, like people don't think about our lives.
Yeah, it's not a celebrity sighting. It's like, oh, actually, I do have a private life.
Yeah.
And then when folks are, you know, might be anti the combination of sex work and parenting, you know, maybe second wave feminists or whoever, more conservative folks might say, oh, well, that's the reason why you shouldn't be doing the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. When it's like, no, actually, that's why we should have good boundaries in society and treat each other with respect. That's it's not because I'm making a bad choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about trained fighters? You know, people who use their bodies to hit other people, they still have agreements and like boundaries. An example I love to use is the Evander Holyfield Mike Tyson fight from back in the 90s when Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's ear off during the match. That obviously wasn't something that's allowed. Mm-hmm. So it's like, even in doing sex work, it's possible, quite possible, for people to violate you, but that doesn't mean it's okay. You know, when like a police officer or a firefighter gets hurt in the line of duty, it's a tragedy. When a sex worker gets hurt while they're working, it's like, oh, well, that's what you should expect. And it really, really sucks. And I hate that I'm going to have to explain to my kid, like, people are going to treat mommy like crap because of the work that she chooses to do, that she sometimes enjoys, and that has been able to pay for everything you see around you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go back, you know, kind of a few years in time and ask, you're someone who uses your body for your art, for your work, and then you have a child. You birth a child. You have a C-section. And what does that change for you?
So stressful. I got this question, and this is a good question, and someone said, why is it that I mostly see women who look like you, you know, skinny, Barbie-like women in strip clubs? Is that all people like? And I said, no, that is not what people like. Clients want to see providers that have stretch marks and pendulous breasts and cesareans, because ultimately some folks are going to be more comfortable around women that look like the women they would date. Or, you know, like, I'm not everyone's cup of tea, that's fine. But in booking and hiring, a lot of the booking and hiring, you have to compare it to any other mainstream advertising, culture, modeling. You know, the people you see used in ads a lot of times are airbrushed, they're skinny, they have white teeth that are straight, they're white, they're heteronormative looking, they have long hair. So in going back to work, I know no matter what I look like, I am always going to be able to find clients who like me and feel comfortable with me. I don't know that I'm always going to be able to get hired by a booking agent who wants a tattooed Barbie. So I think I only took 6 weeks off after my, yes, it was 6 weeks off after my cesarean birth. Go back to the club. I wanted to go back to work. I was losing my mind. I was bored. You know, I also had like kind of the overhang belly and the scar that I was hiding with a waist cincher. And I remember one of the girlfriends of a different club management, she came in and she said, yeah, I came here because I want to see what your body looks like after the child. I was like, oh, fuck, here comes the judgment.
Wow.
You know, so I don't know if I explained that well enough, but like, I know that my body can be utilized to interact with people throughout my life, no matter how old I am. But it can be harder to maybe get hired working in a venue or like on a platform, if that makes sense, because we're still basing a lot of our beauty ideals around the shit we see on TV. I remember working in a club. There was a mommy. She had had twins about the same time I had had my one. She had very pendulous breasts down to her waist. She had a very obvious cesarean scar, and she fucking rocked it, and she made more money than I did. Meanwhile, I'm like trying to cover my scar and like lifting up my boobs, and she would just smash dudes' heads between. She would pick up her breasts and just smash them.
Nice.
You know? And it was like, and she cleaned up because she had the confidence, and she's a real person, you know. So it's complicated. It's, you know, advertising, commercialism is so multifaceted. But always being judged in this society is a common theme.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and here's a fun story. You know how you lactate for a while sometimes?
Yeah.
Yes.
After? So because I went back 6 weeks postpartum, and I was nursing for 16 months after, I would, you know, you feel, if you ever feel the tingle and you're like, here it comes, I'd be on stage and I'd feel, I'm like, my breasts are going to start shooting. Yeah. So I'd pick up a discarded piece of clothing and like hold it to my breasts and kind of squeeze, squeeze into the clothing, like while I'm dancing. Nobody knew.
Tricks for breastfeeding strippers.
Nobody knew. You know, it's like you have to make it work.
Did you say 16 months?
Breastfeeding, nursing?
Yeah, nursing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I just want listeners to know, you had said before that you have implants.
I didn't have my implants
until after. Then. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I got my implants about a year and a half after I stopped.
I was thinking that you breastfed with implants, but actually lots of people do breastfeed with implants.
So that could go to our I'll just tell you that I have a rupture in my left implant, which is a manufacturer's defect. I found out about this about a couple months ago. And my surgeon asked me at my consultation, they said, did you have anything traumatic happen, like a car accident or a pregnancy? cause this? Because apparently those are the things more likely to make implants rupture, is a pregnancy with the breast change.
Yeah. Okay. Your mammary glands are going to swell, and that would maybe be a lot of internal just
pressure. Right. But I thought that was really funny that the two like traumatic events that could have happened would be a car accident or just nursing, which just goes to show how much, you know, bodies can change and shit happens. It's weird sometimes.
Maybe you could speak a little bit about, I know navigating insurance and healthcare as a sex worker can be a real challenge, just in finding both sex positive providers and just paying for medical care and healthcare.
So where I went to have my breasts done is a highly recommended surgeon in Oregon. They don't advertise. They work off of referrals only. My breasts look very natural. It fools people all the time. Most of their clients are well-to-do housewives. So I'm a little more blue collar than a lot of their clients. They do see a lot of dancers, but I notice that when I'm in there, it's not that they're dismissive. I feel like there's a slight giggle sometimes in reference to industry stuff. I can sense some of the ignorance around it. That's just always kind of weird in general. But that's like going to any provider. I could go to Planned Parenthood and, you know, they do the intake, like, what do you do? Da, da, da. Are you safe? And if I say I'm a sex worker, it depends on the provider. They could be totally chill and comfortable and understand what that means. Or I could get a lecture because they're like, oh, are you endangering yourself? So with my surgeon's office, they've been supportive. There's a manufacturer's defect on the implant, so I have some help with a warranty. I'm also out several thousands of dollars just to pay for it anyway because insurance doesn't cover this. I only have insurance because I pay through the state, the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, Obama tried, but like it's very expensive. I pay almost $500 a month for me and my child. And none of this was covered. Like, I had to have an ultrasound, a mammogram, and then ultimately an MRI to determine if I had a rupture at all. And that ended up being, with my insurance for the mammogram, it was, I think, $200, which is okay. Insurance wouldn't even cover an MRI for this. So I paid $1,392 cash to have that. If I had had insurance that would have qualified, it would have been over $2,000. So the cash price was actually cheaper. And then I had the option to have my, I could have had a little help with insurance to have it reconstructed, but I would have had to go to a hospital with a different surgeon, where I have no relationship with the surgeon. I don't have like a gallery to look at their work, you know, to see how that would turn out. And so I said, no, I'm going to go through my surgeon. So I get a little help with the boob warranty. Otherwise, I'm paying for anesthesia and the surgery. It's going to be about $4,000. The breast warranty should cover, they said, up to $3,500. But I don't know what that means, up to $3,500. It could be, I don't know, $100. It could be $3,000. I don't know. And then there's definitely time off where I'm not going to be able to dance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my main income. Writing doesn't pay very much. It's been incredibly difficult to advertise any of the amateur porn that I make and sell, any of the webcam I do, any of the fetish gear I would sell, any of the consulting I would offer because of FOSTA and SESTA, which if you are an advocate for sex workers or queer people or sexual rights.
You need to be fighting to change this.
Yeah. Wow. If you don't know what FOSTA and SESTA are, go Google. Go do a web search. Why is FOSTA and SESTA bad? There's writing about it that the mainstream media has not covered. So basically, I've had a very difficult time even being successful in my work in the last year. I made 30% less this year and hustling much harder just to try to keep up because of FOSTA and SESTA made it so hard for individual sex workers and providers to advertise in the last year. So I did make a GoFundMe. The goal was met within a couple days, which really speaks to the support I feel from a lot of people who've been following my work. That was amazing. So it's been a lot of people just donating like $25 here or there saying thank you for, you know, any teaching or anything, which makes me feel good. Like, oh, good. I hope Instagram doesn't deactivate me again because it's still my best connection to the outside world in terms of advertising. So it's been quite a bit to navigate. I'm learning a lot.
I think it's really important for people to really go research FOSTA SESTA and figure out how they can in some way, either by contributing to organizations who are fighting against it or join in activism some way, just because, especially coming from the parenting standpoint, sex work is how so many parents pay to take care of their children.
Mm-hmm.
It's work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's work that people are doing that helps take care of their children and oftentimes keeps them out of needing government assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's censorship.
And it's censorship.
And, yeah. You know, infringing on our freedom of speech.
Totally. I had my partner, my beloved boyfriend partner. So he's the person that I make the porn with, I sell the porn with. And this is like, I'm hardly on Pornhub. It's not like you were in porn. You made porn for years, Madison, and it was like produced and you were in DVDs and online. Mine is like, email me and I'll send you a clip, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's very DIY and very underground. And I, because of FOSTA SESTA, I can't post on Instagram to my 90,000 followers, hey, I have clips available, because now Instagram doesn't want to be held liable for any adult content transmission or sales. So what I sneakily did on my backup account was, I have erotic visual media for sale. Email this secondary email address. So if Google or Instagram decides to kick me off, at least I have other backups. And I had a few people email and I sold some clips, and I always request a copy of their ID so I know they're old enough and like I have my verification processes. And this is a lot of legwork. But so I remember we divide the money proportionally to what is fair. I remember I said to my partner, I said, hey, I have $50 for you. And he's like, oh my God, that's great, because my feet are wet. It's been raining all day. I have holes in my shoes. I have to get new shoes. And we're buying him new shoes with the $50. You know, I'm like, here's your portion. And he looks at me, he's like, oh, the horrors of porn. You know, porn ruins lives. Like, literally, this is why he could buy new shoes. You know, and not even him, but like, that's one example. But yeah, being at the grocery store a few months after FOSTA and my child being holding up something for the dog. It was like just a dog's toy. It wasn't like food. We're not starving, you know. But she's like, can we get this for Lux? And I said, no, honey, we can't afford it. And I'm like, oh, God, this is how it begins. Like, we can afford less and less and less because I can't do my adult work. So when I see white women on the internet being like, porn is evil and it ruins families, I'm like, this is keeping
this
me
is
alive.
A family.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe we're out of time already.
Me neither.
So fun to talk to you and this enlightening.
This was wonderful. Thank you.
So this was our podcast with Elle Stanger.
Oh, can I tell you where to go to hear mine?
Yes.
Yeah. So
go to hers.
Yeah. If you want to check out Strange Bedfellows podcast, we are all over on Apple, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play.
Perfect. And the website for it is strangebedfellowspdx.com.
Yeah.
And finding your writing on stripperwriter.com.
Yes, thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
Bye.
That was so good.
You've been listening to Wash Your Mouth Out Podcast. You can find us on the web at washyourmouthoutpodcast.com. Come follow us on Instagram at washyourmouthoutpodcast. And on Twitter at Mouth Out Podcast.
Wash your mouth out. Wash your mouth out. Wash your mouth out.